O&M Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. Last week, information became public regarding the Federal Communication Commission's, or FCC's, forthcoming proposed new rules regarding net neutrality, the principle that Internet service providers should enable access to all content and applications regardless of the source and without favoring or blocking particular products or websites. Reaction to the proposed rules, which include the creation of a fast lane for information delivery from companies willing to pay for it, has been strong and swift, with many foreseeing the end of net neutrality, a principle of which a campaigning President Obama in 2007 claimed to be in strong support, and one which the FCC has struggled at enforcing, with the Commission's last two attempts at enforcing net neutrality having been tossed out by the courts. The Commission's new rules will be officially proposed during the next FCC public meeting on May 15th. Joining me in studio today to discuss these issues are the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, Paul Gessing, Alana Offield, campaign coordinator for the Media Literacy Project, and John Brown, president, chief technology officer, and co-founder of CityLink Fiber. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate your time. So, Alana Offield, let's begin with you. Your organization, Media Literacy Project, located here in Albuquerque, has been following and organizing around this issue for years. For those who don't know, what is the Media Literacy Project and why is it involved with net neutrality?
At the Media Literacy Project, we really believe that media should build bridges in our communities rather than put up walls. So we do that several ways. And one of the ways that we do that is by creating grassroots campaigns that get folks involved in media policy work so that they can understand what's often a very complicated set of rules around net neutrality and other media policy, so they can really start to inform that policy so that they have the tools that they need to deconstruct media and create media that reflects their lived experience.
Now, I know this is a leading question, but what is problematic about to your organization about the FCC's proposed net neutrality rules?
We're really concerned about the idea of the fast lane. So that means that certain companies will pay their internet service providers more money so that their content will load quicker or better. And we feel that that leaves huge parts of our community behind, from small business owners to nonprofits like ourselves. Our content and the things that we create might not be able to be found as easily as, say, Google, because we can't pay the prices that Google can pay to make their websites load quickly.
Now, the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC's chairman, Tom Wheeler, has said that the new rules would not allow degradation or slowing down of existing service, but rather just that fast lane for increased speed. Is this a distinction that satisfies at all?
Not really, because what they said, and I forget his exact wording, was that they would use sort of discretion in who they would allow to charge for the fast lane, right? So they would decide, like, if it was in a internet service provider's best interest to charge a company for the fast lane, and they would sort of make those decisions on a case-by-case basis. But as we know, Chairman Wheeler, being a former lobbyist for cable companies, we know that often corporations are in the pockets of governments and vice versa. And so we really feel that our community media that's trying to get out community content, community websites, small business websites would really struggle and would often not be able to compete.
Now, there was an Albuquerque Business First poll. It looked like there were only three choices, but the way it broke down, the 153 respondents asked about thoughts about net neutrality, 59% were opposed, 24% didn't understand, and 12% didn't know. I don't know. I'm sure there were people in favor. I don't even know if that was an option, but we're going to focus on that 24% right now. We're going to take a little time to just keep exploring our guests here and their understanding of the issue so that our listeners can also understand. So, Paul Gessing, your organization, the Rio Grande Foundation, has also been addressing the net neutrality issue for some time. Can you please tell us the mission of the Rio Grande Foundation, the organization of which you are president?
Yeah, we're a free market-oriented public policy research organization. Most would say that's a think tank. We're based here in Albuquerque. We predominantly focus on New Mexico-based public policy issues, but any major issue that Washington is dealing with that's also going to impact New Mexico and the citizens of the state is of core interest to my organization.
Now, you wrote an opinion piece for the Las Cruces Sun News in March of 2010, arguing against network neutrality rules. What was the central tenet of your argument against those rules?
Generally speaking, the market can allocate these internet speeds and these resources more effectively than a one-size-fits-all government policy. And, you know, Netflix and YouTube alone use approximately 50% of all internet bandwidth. And I don't have a problem with charging those companies. This is not a big business versus little person, individuals and nonprofits kind of argument. This is a internet service provider, i.e. Comcast, CenturyLink, those big businesses versus the big businesses of Netflix and Google, which owns YouTube. And I don't see why there's so much passion on one side supporting the Googles and the Netflixes of the world and against the Comcast. I'm not saying any of these corporations are pure of heart and they've never stuck it to their customers. I just think that there's nothing wrong with making the truly heavy payers or users pay a little additional to gain that fast access.
You know, I saw a chart or a graph, I think it was put out by the Washington Post. Netflix already pays Comcast. I don't know if there was some filtering going on or what happened, but the chart showed how much their speeds skyrocketed on Comcast once they began paying Comcast. How is this different, though, what's being proposed than Netflix already paying Comcast?
I don't think it would be vastly different, and I'm sure my co-panelists could illuminate the specifics of that, but that's generally the idea, is that if you're a heavy user, you know, Netflix alone, 28.18% of the entire internet is just people downloading movies. I think it's perfectly reasonable to expect people who buy that service to be paying a little bit more. I don't think net neutrality is going to impact my nonprofit KUNM or any of these small light users of the internet in a hard negative way.
Now, a week ago when we had the preview of the net neutrality rules that may be proposed at the May 15th meeting, are these new rules, I'm gathering they're not objectionable at this point?
I don't think there's a specific reason to object to them at this point. Obviously, proposed rules are a discussion point and can be altered and changed. They're trying to come up with something that is viable after the courts have repeatedly thrown out the previous rules. So this is, you know, a third crack at the apple, so to speak.
Okay, John Brown, let's bring you into the conversation. Tell us a little bit about your company, CityLink, please, and its connection to the city of Albuquerque.
CityLink is a locally owned company. We're about 8 years old. We own our own fiber optic network in Albuquerque, and we're the easiest thing to say is that we're doing what Google Fiber is doing in other communities. We're actually doing it here in Albuquerque. We're delivering gigabit internet services to homes and businesses at very affordable prices.
Okay, gigabit being?
1,000 megabits per second, or roughly 1,000 times faster than your current DSL or cable-type connections, just to give some parameter.
And
there.
Is that what Google is doing
Google's
as well?
Google's doing that as well.
And do you have an agreement with the city?
So we have an agreement with the city. It's called a franchise agreement that gives us access to the right-of-way, just like any other utility. So that basically all that agreement does is allows us to dig the street up, put our conduit in the ground, and put our own fiber optic cable in the ground to run to businesses and to homes.
Is it an exclusive franchise?
Cannot be exclusive. Both on federal and state policy, a city cannot grant an exclusive agreement.
Now, some cities, let's take Santa Monica, California, for instance, have decided to build a municipal broadband network. Is the franchising with the city of Albuquerque in lieu of a municipal broadband network?
I think they're two completely separate types of concepts.
All right. So just trying to get a little more understanding for people. But now these new rules that have been proposed, including this fast lane, some people say these are a gift to Internet service providers. But are the rules as previewed a gift to you, a small local Internet service provider or ISP?
Well, I mean, I think if we purely looked at ourselves in just a capitalistic viewpoint, I would love for Netflix to pay us there a very large percentage of our traffic every night. But that's not how we view as a company, or I, as the head of the company, I don't view that we should get paid for that. And I think there's a creation of a non-level playing field. And I think the playing field becomes unlevel if a cable company is getting paid for carrying the traffic by Netflix and is also getting paid for by the subscriber. They're double dipping, and they can artificially change their prices to come in and take predatory action in a market that excludes the local service providers or the other more regional competitors that they may have. So they can use it to artificially reduce their pricing.
Now, how when we talked yesterday, I said, gosh, this issue is so complex. And it is. But you said that you had a view that was very simple also about the Internet. And go ahead if you'd espouse that, please.
Well, some folks would probably say I'm old school Internet. I've been on the Internet for 25 years, going almost 30 years. To me, the Internet it's not about a person. It's not about a company. The Internet is not about even a country. The Internet is about humanity. And the Internet is our way as humans on this planet to interact, to communicate, to share ideas, to collaborate, to try new things, to experiment, to shine a spotlight where injustice has been done in you know, whatever war-torn countries we might have. I know the early stages of the Internet were very helpful to apartheid in South Africa and being able to help them get their missions out and their messages out. The Internet is in my mind, is not something about just selling and watching TV or just surfing the web and buying stuff online. It's a way of communicating and connecting everybody together. And with that in mind, there shouldn't be anything out there as an Internet service provider that blocks that freedom.
All right. We're talking today about net neutrality, the principle, put most simply, that all Internet traffic, regardless of source and or destination, should be treated equally. I'm joined in the studio by the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, Paul Gessing, by Alana Offield, campaign coordinator for the Media Literacy Project, and by John Brown, the president and co-founder of CityLink Fiber. If you would like to join in our discussion, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@KUNM.org. You may post comments on the Call-In Show webpage at KUNM.org, or you may call our local number 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. Tell us, are you aware of and responding to the proposed FCC rules regarding net neutrality? We'd love for you to join us today. We'll be back with you and your calls and comments after this short break.
Support for KUNM provided by New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, a not-for-profit financial cooperative with member benefits for checking, credit cards, auto loans, and mortgages. Details on member benefits at nmefcu.org.
I'm Stephen Spitz, the host of New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. Albuquerque has just been selected as one of only five U.S. cities for a Living Cities Award, making Albuquerque eligible for millions of dollars in grants to bolster our economy. Joining me to discuss this are the head of Albuquerque's Living Cities Initiative and Mayor Richard Berry, this Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. We're talking today about net neutrality, the principle, put most simply, that all Internet traffic, regardless of source and or destination, should be treated equally. If you would like to join in our discussion, you may call or email us. Our numbers are locally 277-5866, that's 277-KUNM, or toll-free 1-877-KUNM. 1-800-899-5866. Let's go ahead and continue our discussion here in the studio. And starting, well, a question for all of you. On whom would these rules have the most impact, and what would that be? Let's go ahead and start with you, Alana.
We really feel that one of the most impacted communities would be rural communities. So in New Mexico, we know that we lag behind the country in rural broadband build-out. And so we see these increased charges to companies being passed down to folks who already can't afford internet or don't have it available. Often, service providers will say that if they're allowed to charge more, then they'll have more money to build out. But we know that they're increasingly making more money, and build out is not following that. So,
no,
I'm concerned.
I did read somewhere that the FCC is putting millions into helping people in New Mexico get access. It sounds like that may not be enough.
Yeah, there was recently an FCC decision to increase speeds, and that can really help folks in rural communities who, if they do have access to the internet, it's often very slow. So that was like a good thing that the FCC did. But these rules could really affect that, in that companies would still kind of feel that they needed to sort of cherry pick where they wanted to build out. And then prices would increase for folks. And if they were on the internet, we want them to have this fast, high-speed internet that, like, we have in urban communities. But if they get on the internet but they can't afford to pay extra fees to see certain sites, or if there's some sort of tiered service model that follows the fast lane, then they're still going to be getting the slower speeds anyway. So they might not be able to see the content that they want anyway. So,
Paul, guessing on whom would these new rules have the most impact, and what would that be?
Heavy users of the internet, you know, the folks who watch a lot of movies, Netflix, gamers, heavy YouTube watchers. And of course, Netflix struck the deal to pay a little extra to get that fast lane. YouTube, Google haven't done that yet. In terms of rural users, totally different issue, but New Mexico's legislature this year faced an issue on expanding the internet broadband into rural communities, deregulating, and they didn't do that. So there's a lot of regulatory issues. This is one of many regulatory issues regarding the internet. But I would say that these rules in particular would, I think, ultimately benefit the heavy users, because instead of being all of us stuck in that slow lane, slowed down by the Netflixes and YouTubes of the world, the folks who really use those services would get access to those things faster, whereas the rest of us could still use the regular internet and have access to that and not have to necessarily pay for the premium service.
Now, we've talked about benefits to consumers, but I assume the costs of, that the companies would pay for the fast lane would be passed on to consumers. So there's that. But don't these companies also stand to make even a greater profit? They're already making a large profit on their services that they offer, internet service providers, at least the large companies. Don't they stand to make an even greater profit as a result of this?
Well, there's nothing wrong with making a profit, especially if you are providing something that your customers desire. I mean, Netflix, up until very recently, their business model was sending out DVDs in the mail, and that's one model of doing business. The internet and the increasing availability of high-speed internet has allowed them to move on to the internet, and there's going to be cost savings associated with that, but there's going to be additional expenses as well of having to consume all that bandwidth, and they should pay for that as well. So there's going to be trade-offs, as with anything. There's going to be some positives and some negatives, whether it's for the companies themselves or the customers themselves.
John, you made a decision to start up a small company, in effect, to compete with the larger internet service providers. Why?
Because our customers wanted something better. Because we wanted to be able to do something better for the city and for our community. And quite honestly, we sort of stumbled into the fact that there was this fiber optic network that went through a bankruptcy proceeding 8 years ago in our own backyard. We were able to acquire that fiber network at an affordable cost, at a good price, And, you know, when we got it, we had 19 buildings on it. Today we have north of 150, 170 buildings and connected, and hundreds of homes connected. You know, we wanted to make it a better environment. We need the connectivity if we're going to support economic development and economic growth. If we're going to support small business, entrepreneurship, startups, we need to have an environment that gives them the infrastructure that they need. And time and time again, constantly heard that our competitors weren't providing that infrastructure. But back to your question real quick about the who is this going to impact? Honestly, we think that not having net neutrality is ultimately going to impact every user of the internet. And it's going to impact all of the consumers, whether that's a commercial user or a residential user. And I think we're going down a slippery slope. Today we say it's Netflix and their agreements to pay Comcast, and I think just recently they also said Verizon, for better service. But who gets to decide that the next website, the next content that needs to be paying to get better service isn't media literacy?
You know,
and so who makes that decision?
Well, the FCC says it's going to look at each decision.
I'm from
deal.
The government. I'm here to help.
Well, and people might take, but you asked the question. The FCC has said we're going to look at each deal to make sure it's not impacting free speech, access to the internet. You don't sound very trusting of that process. You're not alone, by the way.
No, I'm not trusting of that process. Personally, I think the government should keep its nose out of it. And if we want to have an environment where Comcast feels that they are having to transport a lot of traffic, then, A, their customers are paying – Comcast customers are paying Comcast $60, $70, $80 a month to get to the internet. Not to get to a portion of it, but to get to the whole thing we call the internet. So Comcast is making money on that. Now Comcast is going to make money on Netflix paying them to not dork their traffic, to use
which they're already doing. And
right.
then the next step. Let's go ahead and bring in a caller. It is Mike from Santa Fe. Good morning, Mike. Thanks for joining our discussion.
Yes, good morning. This is really interesting. I guess my question is based on the fact that it appears cost of internet service in the United States is magnitudes times more expensive than most of the other parts of the world at speeds considerably slower. And I suspect it's because the content provider is also the network owner. And I don't believe that's the case in most of the rest of the world. And as a consequence, it's to their advantage to profit from all of these schemes to charge for high-speed internet rather than improve the network itself. I'd like comment on that.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for your call. And before we get to our panelists, so Brazil just enacted an Internet Bill of Rights, and now the European Union has voted on strict net neutrality rules. I believe in October the EU Parliament will actually try to formalize those rules. So there are differences around the world. And, John, you were shaking your head during Mike's call, if you want to address something briefly.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for calling in. I absolutely agree with you. I mean, the content owner, Comcast, just to use them directly, is also the internet service provider. And you know, one of the reasons they had a lot of issues with video content going across the internet is that was taking away from the direct pay, direct revenue, and direct pay-per-view type revenues. And so they're trying to figure out how to do that. We made a conscious decision not to put video on our fiber network because basically we have to pay Comcast, because Comcast is a separate company, is one of the largest media content owners. They own the rights to hundreds of channels and hundreds of shows. And so at the end of the day, the money still goes to them, and they get to control whether or not we can get to that content or not get to that content. And that didn't seem like an equitable situation.
And all these large companies are lobbying governments around the world. It's not just in the United States. Paul or Alana, either of you want to address Mike's issue?
I would say at least something to do with it might be population density. United States is a very sparsely populated in a lot of rural areas. There, you do have the big urban areas, but a lot of the countries we're being compared with in terms of internet cost and speed are very densely populated. It's very easy to get those wires in a very compact area.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Ron from Albuquerque. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. I've been involved with the industry for quite a while. John and I were both in an internet providers association a while back. Relating this back to our Telecommunications Act that we had in the past, and I guess the analogy to me is like it's like the interstate roads. I think the ownership of the infrastructure that the data is being transported across, it's akin to having like toll roads and being able on that toll road, if you own that road, to govern, okay, I'm only going to let Sears use my road, and I'm not going to let these other guys, they're going to have to pay more money for it. So I'm wondering if the real solution lies in public ownership of the actual infrastructure for the internet. I mean, the lines themselves. Right now, it's private ownership, and it's like we have toll roads everywhere. Okay.
All right, let's go ahead and talk to Alana a little bit about this, because one of the things that the court that struck down the existing rules talked about was what some people are calling the nuclear option, but it's certainly available to the FCC, is to treat the internet as a utility, and ISPs, internet service providers, as common carriers. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so at MLP, we're in support of the internet being reclassified as a common carrier. We feel that that will reinforce net neutrality rules, make the internet more accessible, because it will be regulated, for example, like telephone services are regulated. The FCC has rules in place that say that no matter where you are, your telephone service, if you have it, has to meet certain requirements, and it has to be of a good quality, right? And depending on like what telephone service you have, they can't say, oh, well, you can't call somebody that has a different telephone service. They can't block your communication. We see the internet as a tool for communication, a common carrier. Right now, what Verizon argued in their case against the FCC was that they aren't so much a common carrier or a platform for speech, but that they're a speaker. And to say that they can't control the content that comes over their service is a violation of their rights to free speech. That's a very simplified version of what went down in that case, but that's sort of how we see it. And we think that if the FCC took steps to reclassify, that we could get net neutrality back and the internet would be as enjoyable as it has been.
Well, and there are many who say that the designation of internet service providers as an information service is outdated. That's no longer what's happening. They mm-hmm. are the pipes that bring us the information. But I know in speaking with both Paul and John yesterday, there was objection with reclassifying internet service providers as utilities or common carriers. Let's start with you, Paul, and then briefly, and then we'll move on to you, John.
No, that's not the direction we need to go. And the caller mentioned the toll road concept. I actually think that is an apt analogy. But as somebody who thinks that toll roads are a step in the right direction in general, and not too many people are familiar with the old New York style of toll road. I'm talking about dynamic pricing, where during rush hour you have the prices increase so that people are incentivized to either not use the road during rush hour or the traffic in general keeps moving. That's the concept. And you encourage investment. You encourage everybody to have better service from that road when you have dynamic pricing in place, where heavy users or people who are using it at the heaviest times are incentivized not to do so. And then you can, if you're flexible, use that service for a cheaper price outside of those times.
But here's where the toll road analogy breaks down, or at least my brain just thought that. So if you can't afford to use the toll road, you find another road that is not a toll road. But if you can't afford to use the internet in whatever way, then you have no other choice. There is one internet.
Well, the analogy I would use is that in Washington, D.C. recently, there's the Beltway in Virginia was increased with added lanes. There's the existing internet, if you will, the existing beltway. But you're benefiting both because some of that additional traffic is using the toll road. Now, you may be a poor single mom hustling to get your kid from the babysitter or preschool, and that $3, $4 could be the difference between you getting charged $25 or $30 for overage fees. So you may not be able to, but there are people who are willing to, even low-income folks who are stressed for time, and their time is more important than their money. And that's the concept.
And John, we've got full phone lines, so I do want to get to our callers, but just briefly, why is it objectionable to you to classify internet service providers as utilities?
I'm going to be more specific. Excuse me. I'm going to be more specific and say I think that classifying an internet service provider as a common carrier.
Okay. Appreciate it.
As opposed to a utility. As a common carrier is a place we should not go. The current regulatory regime and definitions all around common carrier would actually impose more burden both financially and labor and time and reporting and requirements on ISPs, and those are going to be additional costs. We can see that in a telephone world. If you look at your phone bill and look at all the taxes and fees you pay on a phone bill today, you pay almost another 30% of your bill in various state and federal regulatory fees.
Okay, and
we don't want that on the internet.
All right, but it's up for the public to decide, is that burden are they willing to bear that burden as long as there continues to be equal access to the internet? Let's go ahead and bring in Glenn from Jemez Springs. Good morning, Glenn.
How you doing? Thanks for having this. About three different things come to my mind. The first is, are the folks there at KUNM aware of how fiber optic may not even reach 19 of our pueblos in the state? I'm sure everybody's aware of how electrical lines go over Navajo land and how people can't even connect to it. And then thirdly, this just seems to me another dimension of corporate America taking over and leaving the rest of us behind. If any comments on any of those would be appreciated. Thanks.
Well, Senator Elizabeth Warren came out, I think, yesterday with a statement and said this is the haves and the have-nots and creating a greater divide between people. Paul, you want to address that a bit?
Yeah. If you do regulate these providers as utilities, you're not going to have any additional investment. You're going to drive out players like John's company and other businesses that want to compete. You're going to limit the accessibility for everybody because, like the interstate highways, the government or whatever entity is not going to invest the money to keep these systems going in an efficient and effective manner for the long term. So you're going to slowly strangle the internet long term if you engage that kind of policymaking.
All right, let's go ahead and move to our next caller. It's Andre from Albuquerque. Good morning, Andre. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. I just had a quick question. What does this current net neutrality situation mean exactly for small businesses and nonprofit organizations?
All right, let's let Alana address it, and then we'll move to you, John. Go ahead, Alana.
Sure. So very simply, small businesses right now on the internet, whenever you go online, you can just as easily visit a local small business's website as you can the New York Times or Google or even a massive corporation like Target or Walmart. You can get to their content at the same speed and see all their information there. That is because of net neutrality. So if we don't have net neutrality and if this fast lane model is put in place, then small local businesses here in Albuquerque would be forced to compete online with businesses like Target or Walmart for their content to load or even be available to be seen at all, depending on sort of contracts that have been made with internet service providers and these big companies. So it would throw small businesses into an arena that they probably wouldn't be able to afford to compete in online. And we know that small businesses here in New Mexico are able to reach people all over the world because of net neutrality. And I think that we want to see that continue for economic growth in our state. For nonprofits, it's very similar. Also, there's the risk that a nonprofit like Media Literacy Project, who has been critical of big internet service providers like Comcast, that our content would just be completely blocked altogether if net neutrality rules weren't reinstated.
There is an article that appeared in Forbes magazine, a quotation from it, from the head of Free Press, CEO Craig Aaron. The FCC apparently doesn't realize the dangerous incentives these rules would create. The routing of data on the Internet is a zero-sum game. Unless there is continual congestion, no website would pay for priority treatment. And that's from a April 24th Forbes magazine article. John, you wanted to address the effect on small business briefly, please.
I think the effect on small business, and I'll address this through an example. We have a company here in Albuquerque that's a great worldwide company. That's a software company that develops point-of-sale software that is used by small businesses all across the world. And, you know, these guys have created a great app. They've got a lot of people out there following what they do. And so what I see as an issue with net neutrality and how it could impact small business is what's to prevent Comcast or a big ISP from coming in and saying, hey, we want to get into the point-of-sale business too, and we're going to slow down this small creative company's application, and we're not going to let them have quite as good of an experience online when the restaurant or the small business is using that point-of-sale versus if they're using our point-of-sale service that they buy from us, the big ISP.
Well, we get back to what the FCC chairman said, that, you know, there's going to be no degradation of service and that there will be transparency about that.
But again, how do you measure degradation? I mean, if I'm letting you all go at 65 miles an hour down the freeway, but if I pay my local I won't use that. If I pay someone that will allow me to go down the freeway faster, have I not created a differentiation? Someone who's willing to pay someone faster is going to get down that freeway quicker. Well, you know, we can spin that analogy around where still the small business, I think, is going to end up getting hurt. We're going to stifle ideas. We're going to stifle growth.
We're talking today about net neutrality and you. I am joined by CityLink Fiber President and co-founder John Brown, Rio Grande Foundation President Paul Gessing, and Media Literacy Project Campaign Coordinator Alana Offield. If you would like to join in our discussion, you may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may call us locally at 277-5866 or toll free at 1-877-899-5866. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back with your calls.
Pete Seeger, more than any other musician, has kept America singing. Bill Clinton.
Some artists make musical history. Pete Seeger made history with his music.
I'm David Dunaway. Tune in for Pete Seeger, How Can I Keep From Singing?
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
This week on This American Life. Okay, here's a question for you. How many people around us are high? Doctors, our own family members, are lots of workers at bars and restaurants on coke, like right now?
Yeah, jump down to the bathroom, you know, straighten yourself up, come upstairs.
How often does that happen to you?
8 minutes ago.
Okay.
Our unscientific study and its findings this week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about net neutrality and you. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. She's from Albuquerque. It's Shirley. Good morning, Shirley.
I was just saying that net neutrality is equality for everyone. That will not stifle new people because everyone will have the same internet speed. It will be equal for everyone, and that is a democracy. I'm just saying, Representative Wheeler, whom Obama put in there, is head of corporations. They all come from the cable companies and the big corporations, and the same with Powell under Bush. It is not good to not have net neutrality. That means equality for all, and that is democracy.
All right. Thanks so much for your call today, Shirley. Let's go right to Jarrett from Albuquerque. Good morning, Jarrett. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, and thanks for covering this topic. I just want to say that I think that the real heart of the problem here is that this is not an industry that practices any kind of competition. There are three providers that have divided up the nation, and they don't compete in the same state. And this has resulted in the most expensive and slowest internet of any developed nation. And this has really big consequences aside from just being a huge embarrassment to the nation that invented the internet. And however, these consequences actually align the interests of people and corporations, because corporations want to have access to high-speed internet too. And so the real fear, I think, with net neutrality is that this will then take corporate interests that are currently aligned with the populace away and realign them with these ISPs that don't provide good internet and don't provide cheap internet. And the real consequence is that you can't function in this world without it. You can't apply for jobs. You can't succeed at school without access to the internet. And so, you know, I've heard some talk about if this becomes a utility, regulation degrading the internet. Well, the internet in this country is already in a really sad state because of the way that the FCC has failed to regulate these companies. So we need some change.
All right, Jared, thanks for your call this morning. And Alana, would you like to comment on Jared's?
Sure. I definitely agree that competition is a good thing, and the end of net neutrality means that there's less competition online. I mean, our internet service, we have very few options. In my neighborhood, one of my only options was to get Comcast. So even though I work for a nonprofit and organization that's critical of Comcast, I use it at home, right? Because that's the only option that I had. I'm a student. I need it to study and do my whole classes online. I'm a single parent, so I need to do that. We have to pressure these services to get better, and without net neutrality, I don't think that they have like the incentive to really do that and to want to diversify content or make their services better.
So. And John Brown, you indicated you want to add something.
Yeah, real quick. So I think that similar to Paul in his opening statements, that you know a free economy and a free market is a good thing for the industry. I think what we need to have is net neutrality needs to be there, and then the free market is going to determine what ISPs and what service providers people want to use and are going to be available. And if somebody doesn't like the way service provider A is working, they have a choice of service provider B. If we start making the regulatory regime over being a service provider too burdensome, then you're not going to have the creative startup ability of someone coming into creating a service provider. You know, I know a guy down in Berlin that became a wireless internet service provider because he needed better internet at his house, and his neighbors needed better internet at their house, and the folks down the street needed better internet. So he decided to put a tower up and become a wireless internet service provider. And now he's got several hundred customers. With the regulatory regime of common carrier, I don't think he'd be able to do that. The last point about common carrier regulatory thing I want to just insert here real quick is the incumbent telephone companies are rapidly moving away from a regulatory regime. In New Mexico, we've had the A4, 1 through 4, the alternative form of regulation that CenturyLink has been heavily lobbying the state on to get out of regulatory control so that they could be more competitive and more open. So if we're going to put regulation on the internet and we're taking the big guys and we're taking regulation away from them, have we just now flipped the playing field to being unlevel the other direction?
Well, and Paul Gessing, I want to bring you in on this because this is an interesting conversation, because the argument that's being made is that net neutrality promotes competition. So as you've been listening to John and Alana, what are your thoughts?
I don't agree with that. I simply don't think that adding more government regulations, adding more handcuffs on businesses makes them more competitive. It's going to long-term reduce competition. But John is right. There are regulations beyond the FCC, beyond net neutrality, that do impact the relative competitiveness of the ISP markets. And we do need to encourage that. That's very important that we have a competitive ISP market. I think all three of us probably do agree on that point. And also, when the FCC is talking about transparency, that is very important. Transparency in this whole process is something that should be encouraged. If there are data out there showing that I'm getting slower service, I should be able to jump ship to another firm like John.
Well, and you mentioned transparency. Let's bring in Phil from Albuquerque, because I believe he wants to talk about the Rio Grande Foundation. So let's bring Phil in. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. I just wanted to point out that a lot of the people that come out speaking about the free market often hide their affiliations. So, I mean, being for the free market in as an individual is one thing, but having affiliation ties to the Koch brothers network and their organization being funded through that network, I mean, I think it's very important to kind of state that up front, that some of these views aren't necessarily just an ideological view. They're often being paid for in a very slick information network. And that is what the Rio Grande Foundation is. So I think it's very important for Mr. Getson to kind of state his affiliations and the dog he has in the fight.
Well,
I'll listen shortly.
Is that a question that you have then for Paul Getson? You want to phrase it as a question?
Sure. What is the Rio Grande Foundation's tie to the Koch Brothers Network, and is there any legislation? Is this legislation part of their agenda, similar to the solar network fines that we see in Oklahoma now? That was stated as a Koch Brothers Network that's kind of slyly being pushed.
Well, I'm not sure that the Koch brothers own any ISPs. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Perhaps my colleagues can help me out with that. Rio Grande Foundation philosophically is dedicated to free market limited government policies. And saying that the Koch brothers are terrible and horrible, I don't know, go tell the ACLU, which has taken millions of dollars from the Koch brothers to fight against government snooping and looking at our phone records. So the Koch brothers are like any other group of people who have money and fund interests they believe in.
I guess the direct question is, is the Rio Grande Foundation receiving direct money to fight these net neutrality rules?
Absolutely not.
Okay. All right.
You contacted me to engage in this conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
Net neutrality, and generally speaking, federal issues are a relatively small part of what we do. Our focus is on New Mexico-based public policy issues, the economy and the education system.
Well, thank you, Paul. And let's bring in a couple of more callers. John from Albuquerque, you'd like to join our discussion.
Hi. I was listening, and I heard all this talk about competition. And I'm kind of a libertarian myself, a libertarian green, but I just think it's a joke. Our country is a third world country now because of competition and what it's done to our media. You know, I think about Fox in the 90s, and yeah, Fox became a big network by putting on the most dumbed down media for people to watch. And what we need is what we have like on PBS, which is not the most popular media. So when we talk about competition as some godlike force, it's really what's destroyed our economy, because it's caused us to devalue education. And the Internet is all about education and information. And the way we use it, and the fact that and making it available to the public with net neutrality and with regulation, going back to the way we did things in the 50s and 60s, would benefit our economy tremendously, much more than the open market model that you guys are talking about that I've heard so far.
All right. Thanks so much for your call today, John. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. We want to get a couple more callers in. It's Vivian. Vivian, I think you may be from Los Alamos. Thank you for joining us today.
From Los Lunas.
Oh, Los Lunas. I apologize.
Yes.
I can't read that second word.
No, that's okay.
Go ahead. Join our conversation, please.
Sure, yeah. So my question is, what does this mean for rural New Mexicans who already have limited Internet access?
All right. Alana, you want to address that?
Sure. I was talking about this a little bit earlier, but there's been talk about increasing speeds, right? And so that would mean a lot for rural New Mexicans that did have Internet access. We know that there's a lot of rural New Mexicans that don't have Internet access, and that's a big issue, and we need to work on getting the Internet out to rural parts of the states and tribal lands as well. But if we do increase speeds, really, like, what good is that if people are not able to access the content that they want at that speed? If the content that they want to get is slowed down by their internet service provider, like because there's some sort of agreement that's being made so that they can only see certain Comcast and generated content, right? But they can't find the content that they want. So that's like one way. But also rural businesses, I think, too, will be greatly affected. And we've talked a little bit about how this will affect small businesses. And I would say that that also applies to rural businesses, rural small business, rural small businesses are able to sell product
around the world now.
Yeah. So I think that, yeah, that's sort of the two major ways that
I see. All right, let's bring in our final caller of the day. It's Jennifer from Albuquerque, and this is sort of a way to wrap up our program here. You had a question, please, Jennifer.
Yes, so this is such an important issue, and I'm just wondering, like, how I can get involved, how people can get involved in this issue in support of net neutrality.
Yes, John, go ahead.
I would say that the best way to get involved is to pick up the paper and pen, because the pen is mightier than the sword, and write Senator Heinrich and Udall and our congressional delegation, both at the federal level and at the state level, and communicate directly with them your views about net neutrality and how it would either help you or harm you and what you would like them to do. I would also say you should copy those things to the FCC and get that to them.
And just we'll get to Paul and Alana about this as well, but the FCC has already opened up their public comment. You can send your comments. There's one specific email address. It is openinternet@fcc.gov. And you can, regardless of your views, you can let them know you are part of the public. This is they're taking comments early. They're really not they don't have to do this until after that May 15th meeting. But your views, let them know. openinternet@fcc.gov. You also wanted to mention some other way for people to be involved.
Yes. So as we talked a little bit today, not all folks have access to the internet. So if you want to make a comment, you don't have access at your home to send an email, or for whatever reason, you can also call the chairman's office and leave a comment there. And that's 202-418-1000, 202-418-1000. And you can call and leave comment there as well. Media Literacy Project will be formulating an action that folks can take on May 15th, which is when these rules will be kind of decided on by the FCC and then made public after that. So you can visit our website to find out more about that.
And Paul, is the Rio Grande Foundation organizing in any way around this, or is there some source you know of?
We will post our comments, so we will submit our own and post those at our blog, errorsofenchantment.com. And people can look for that and a whole treasure trove of information on New Mexico policy, education, economic policy, and a few things on net neutrality as well.
And just to make sure that's clear, it's Errors of Enchantment, E-R-R-O-R-S. All right. Well, we're wrapping up now, and I do want to thank you all. And just a brief comment from each of you as we close our program. John, let's begin with you.
I think that at the high level, we need to make sure we keep our regulations and our rules to a minimum. And I think that net neutrality is a simple rule that can be applied to help the community.
And Paul?
Competition and transparency are key.
I would say just keep talking about net neutrality to people in your community so that we can really get to understand this issue.
Then we lower that percentage of people who don't understand it. Okay, thanks to our guests, CityLink Fiber President and Co-Founder John Brown, Rio Grande Foundation President Paul Gessing, and Media Literacy Project Campaign Coordinator Alana Offield for making themselves available to our listeners. Thanks to all of you. And thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Apologies to anyone with whom we were unable to speak. Thanks to our engineer, Jefferson White. Elaine Baumgartel has handled our phones today. She is also our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on KUNM, news and music that connect from the University of New Mexico.